Hi, I'm Paul Havershood, host of The Cost of Living. It's a show about money and how it shapes our lives. In big ways, like why inflation could get worse if we all make more money.
Here's the hard truth in all of this. Workers are going to have to eat that real wage loss.
And small ways, like what's the fastest way to order fast food?
That first Big Mac that comes out of the kitchen is going to the drive-thru.
Check out The Cost of Living. We're on CBC Listen or wherever you get podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Jamie Poisson. Jethro Anderson, Corinne Strang, Kyle Morisseau, Jordan Wabas. These teenagers are among Thunder Bay's seven fallen feathers. Seven young people from remote communities who came to the Northern Ontario city to go to high school. None of them live long enough to graduate. This week, Ontario's police watchdog recommended that these cases be reinvestigated, along with at least five other deaths of Indigenous people. The recommendation, it came as part of a scathing review of Thunder Bay's police force.
They failed on an unacceptably high number of occasions to treat or protect the deceased equally and without discrimination because the deceased was Indigenous.
The report says systemic racism exists throughout the force. But stories of abuse and intolerance, they're no surprise to local Indigenous people, many of whom have been calling for help for years.
To me, it almost felt like they didn't want to deal with it. It's almost like, okay, she just froze.
I'm hurt, frustrated. I want to know.
Today, I'm talking to a colleague who has been covering these cases for a long time about how Thunder Bay police have failed Indigenous people.
People have fear in this city. They talk about looking over their shoulders. You know, they hear about human trafficking. They hear about gangs. So that fear is real.
That's today on Front Burner.
My name is Jorge Barrera. I'm a reporter with CBC's Indigenous Unit, and I'm in Thunder Bay.
I'd like to start with the review's findings. What are some of the biggest takeaways for you?
Well, this report, so many takeaways. I mean, it's a really devastating report. I think the biggest thing that came out of this is the reopening of the nine cases. You know, these are deaths that, for the families of the victims, are deaths that are still real, are still open for them, because they have so many unanswered questions. And reopening these cases for them who live with, you know, this loss every day brings up mixed emotions for them.
The mother can't come to Thunder Bay. She gets panic attacks, like she hyperventilates. She has to be on medication just to come into this city because this city represents death and fear and hate.
But I spoke to one family member about this very issue, and they said, you know, if this thing is done right and if it's done properly, then no matter if the answers to our unanswered questions are what we expect or want, that will bring closure, because what really hurts is just not knowing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, the biggest thing about this, the biggest immediate impact. The other findings of this report into Thunder Bay Police and these allegations of systemic racism was that it found that there was systemic racism at the institutional level, but that racism also extended all the way down to the frontline officers.
The fact remains that investigations were too often handled differently because the deceased was Indigenous.
And there's some striking excerpts from interviews with officers included in the report, and you know, the police watchdog said that, you know, these attitudes were not just a few bad apples, it was more than that, and that they bordered on hostility.
Can you tell me about some of those excerpts?
Yeah, there is one officer that was interviewed that said how he thought all reserves should be abolished, and that why do they have to be different? Another one, you know, talked about how he goes to one neighborhood and he's, you know, talks about seeing their kids hanging from trees like monkeys. another officer openly admitted that, yep, after, you know, decades of policing, I am biased after all I've seen. So, you know, that's shocking to hear that these officers who are working in a city of 100,000 and has a population of about 15,000 that are indigenous have these stated and pretty blunt views that they're not afraid to share about indigenous peoples. And, you know, it says, you know, a lot about what indigenous people have been saying in the city for a long, long time. That, and this is not just about death investigations, right? This is about the daily interactions with police.
I recommend that Thunder Bay Police Service leadership publicly and formally acknowledge that racism exists at all levels within the police service and that it will not tolerate racist views or actions.
Jorge, can you paint a picture for me of what life is like for Indigenous people in Thunder Bay?
Well, one thing we have to understand is that Thunder Bay is the service center for, you know, about 49 Northern First Nations communities. I mean, there's two main service centers in Northern Ontario, and there's Sioux Lookout and Thunder Bay. And in these communities, there's not a lot of services. If you need to go for health checkups, if you need to go for counseling, if you need to buy a car part, all these things have to be done in Thunder Bay. And if you know, the biggest thing is if you want to go to high school, you have to go to Thunder Bay or Sioux Lookout, get an education. So people have to go into the city. And when you go into a city that you believe that there is already a pre-existing hostility, people have fear in this city. I mean, I've spoken to youth who attend the high school for First Nations students here. And they talk about fear in the city. They talk about looking over their shoulders. They talk about their fears on the bus, on the city bus. You know, they hear the stories. They hear about human trafficking. They hear about gangs. So that fear is real. And when the agency that's supposed to protect you is also an agency that you fear, there's really little place for you to find shelter in many ways. I mean, that's been this way for decades.
I know Thunder Bay has the highest preponderance of reported hate crimes against Indigenous people in the country.
Yeah, I mean, you have cases of people throwing stuff at people just because they're Indigenous. I mean, the biggest one is the Barbara Kentner case, where she was hit by a trailer hitch from a moving car. Right now, there's someone who's been charged in connection to that, and they're going into trial. But that's reality. I was at a vigil like about 3 weeks ago for a woman named Ashley McKay who was murdered, and there's three people charged in connection with her death. And there was a preacher. In her message, she actually said, you know, even if the city doesn't care, like the idea that Thunder Bay doesn't care as a city about you is something that is part of, you know, the fibers of how people feel about this place. Not that there isn't good people or there isn't strong community, but it's more than an undercurrent.
The river system in Thunder Bay, I understand it has the name the River of Tears. And can you elaborate on that for me?
Yes, there is one stretch of water known as like the McIntyre River. That's the river that's called it's actually a somewhat controversial issue here in the city. Not everybody agrees with it, the name, but it, you know, called the River of Tears because that, you know, that's the place where Stacey Dubungi was found, where there's been a lot of deaths.
So can you tell me about Stacey Dubungi? I know that people have been talking for years about a fractured relationship between the police and Indigenous people in Thunder Bay, but this one case, the case of Stacey Dubungi, is what sparked this report.
So Stacey Dubungi from Rainy River First Nation was pulled from the McIntyre, also called the Neben McIntyre floodway. He was pulled from the waterway in October of 2015. And Thunder Bay Police issued a press release before they even received the autopsy results, saying that there was no foul play suspected in the death.
Brad DeBungie never believed what police told him, that his brother Stacy drowned here on Thunder Bay's McIntyre River after passing out on the riverbank.
I was up against a brick wall and they wouldn't answer my questions and this and that. Everybody just being put aside, like, bodies don't matter or whatnot, because they're Indians and Native people and this and that.
So the First Nation hired a lawyer and they got a private investigator to review the case, and they found some serious problems with the way the police handled the case. And so the family really pushed to have this case reviewed, and they took it to the Ontario's Independent Police Watchdog, the OIPRD, and they, you know, the review is what triggered this whole thing, and the OIPRD's review on the Bungie case was released earlier this year. And it found that there was neglect of duty on the part of Thunder Bay Police in dealing with, in investigating this case.
An independent review has now backed up the findings of a 2016 private investigation, saying there was no basis to affirmatively rule out foul play, and that investigators' premature conclusion may have been drawn because the deceased was Indigenous.
And so that community, the leadership there, and the Bungie's family, you know, they played the pivotal role bringing all of this to light, in my opinion.
And I know of those 37 cases that the Office of the Independent Police Review Director reviewed for this report, 9 of them, they're recommending reinvestigation or reopening these cases. We talked about 4 of them at the beginning of the show, 4 young people who are part of the 7 Fallen Feathers. There's also the case of Christina Glidey that is being recommended for reinvestigation. Can you tell me about how Christina's death was investigated?
Well, this is a case that I've been working on for a couple of years. It's one of those stories as a journalist that just sort of sticks with you. Christina was a mother. She was 28, and she was found basically clinging to life on the gravel by a train bridge that crosses the McIntyre River on March 29th, 2016. And she died in hospital. And the Thunder Bay Police concluded that it was just a case of accidental hypothermia. When she was found, on her jacket, in a t-shirt with her 2 layers of pajama pants, and in her sock feet. One boot was nearby, the other boot was beneath the bridge. Her toque was lying next to her as well. Her jacket was wet. You know, they found an unopened can of cranberry ginger ale in one pocket, a spoon, and a slip of paper, which was a clothing request form. For a local shelter in the other pocket. She had no other ID except for that piece of paper that said in handwritten, Chris Glee. And police actually talked to a man who actually came forward and said he was with Christina on her last night on Earth, basically. And he said that they had intercourse and they were looking at the stars. And when he left, she stayed back on the bridge. She was just sitting on the tracks, just like looking up at the stars. But he said as he left her, he saw people walking towards her. Now, Thunder Bay Police, you know, the interrogation of this individual was critiqued by this report. They said that they didn't really try to probe anything, that even though there was red flags in the interrogation, because the individual volunteered that he did not have an argument with Christina that night, and that he just came to police to, quote, clear his name. The thing is that this individual's DNA was in an offender's registry, And given what he said had transpired that night, they would have had his DNA and they would have been able to run it and find that out. But that was never done. They also were told that there may have been a third person with them that night as well. And that lead was never followed up. On top of that, there was some fresh bruising on her body that was never really, you know, looked at it closely. But her family has always believed that there was something more. I spoke with her mom. I went with her mom to the spot where she was found a couple years ago. And her mom was staying at one of the shelters. She's had a difficult life. She does drift in and out of shelters. I saw her yesterday. She was actually in the hospital when the press conference was held. She just had her foot amputated because of an infection. But she was smiling about the fact that the case was going to be reopened. And she said, you know, I just want to know the truth. It shouldn't just be left like that. And I've spoken with her sister who lives in a Northern First Nation, Kingfisher Lake First Nation. She's been pushing, you know, to have this case reviewed. I spoke with another sister who lives in Winnipeg, Thea. And she says that she's heard rumors from Thunder Bay that there's more to this story than the Thunder Bay police, because, you know, concluded.
Now that's been like a couple years past. Now people are talking. The truth is starting to come out.
Do you think the case should be reopened?
Yes, I think so.
Would you trust the Thunder Bay police to investigate it?
I'm not too sure about that.
And they're finding, you know, solace, and they're finding renewed hope in this report and this calling for a reopening of that case that the family is still carrying because of these unanswered questions.
It took our heart away. Like, my little sister, I just have to keep on, like, with my daily life, I pray to God that somebody will speak up and say something.
Jorge, we've talked about some of what the report has found around officers' attitudes.
Yes.
And we've also talked about some specific findings around police work. So police not interviewing or following up with witnesses or persons of interest, a poor collection and management of evidence. Is there anything else that the report found when it came to the behavior of the police that you think is important to note here?
I think the one thing that really, you know, jumped out at me was some of the excerpts from those interviews with the police officers. That's one. And, you know, the basic finding that it's like Indigenous victims and their families, and this says it in this report, were treated differently because they were Indigenous. They were discriminated against because they're Indigenous.
Can we talk about the police response to this report? How have the police responded to the review?
Well, it was interesting. So right after, the Thunder Bay police got this report 24 hours in advance. That's my understanding. And so the Thunder Bay police chief issued a statement like shortly after the public release. And in the statement, there was no mention of racism. It only used the term systemic barriers. The Thunder Bay police then basically updated their statement, and in scrums with reporters, the police chief actually said systemic barriers and racism, and that they're going to take time to review this report.
I have acknowledged and will continue to do so that barriers do exist within the police. Let me talk. There are barriers within the policing service, but also systemic racism, yes. And this is something that is dear to me. And it's not something that, thanks for the report, we're done. It's something that is very important that we need to analyze, look at, and say, all right, here's what we've done so far. How do we keep going? What does that look like?
And what about the police board that oversees the police service? How are they responding to this?
Well, there is a report coming out that was led by Senator Murray Sinclair. That's supposed to be coming out on Friday. And bits of that report have already leaked out. My colleague Karen Pauls is reporting on it. And his Sinclair's findings, you know, say that this police services board is disengaged from the actions of the Thunder Bay police. It's going to call for basically removing the board and having an administrator in place for the interim until things can get sorted out with this board. I mean, it's a pretty scathing indictment of the way that this police board has acted. And over the years, like, this police board has been one of the strongest defenders of the Thunder Bay police in the face of constant criticism and persistent allegations of systemic racism that in this report are proven.
What about the mayor or other levels of government? How have they reacted to this report?
So there's a new Thunder Bay mayor, Bill Morrow, who took over from Mayor Keith Hobbs. And Keith Hobbs, who's a former longtime Thunder Bay police officer, is facing extortion charges. And that's going to trial. But the new mayor, Bill Morrow, he's saying Thunder Bay has problems, but they're not any different than any other community. And, you know, he's quoted in the local press today, you know, saying that people should, you know, remain cautious and quote, to take a little bit more time here, step back, review the report. Hopefully those families will see this as the beginning point of some change that may result from the recommendations of this report.
From this point forward, we just need to just take a pause for a moment, allow the chief an opportunity to do her work. I do understand that Mr. McNeely has drawn some very serious conclusions and made some very serious recommendations.
I mean, that's a far cry from what, you know, the report was calling for, which was a complete acknowledgement that there are issues. Here's another quote in the local media. I know from time to time when I say that there are people who are not happy, when I say it's true, we have our issues, but it's true that all communities have similar issues. So there's this argument that, hey, things in Thunder Bay, there are issues, but, you know, we're no different than any place else. But it is different here because of Thunder Bay's population that they have in proportion to the problems that it has and faces and the repeated and constant and historical evidence of biased policing, of racism. There is something different about Thunder Bay.
Talk a little bit about some of the other recommendations in this report. So we've talked today about the main recommendation of reopening these 9 sudden death cases. What about some other recommendations that have come from this massive review?
I mean, one of the important things about the reopening of the cases is that they want a multidisciplinary team, a unit, to investigate these cases, and that none of the officers who were involved in the original cases can be part of these investigations. And they've also said that they have they should have a mandate to look at all cases and determine whether more need to be reviewed. Mm. Some of the other recommendations, you know, include things like having police officers wear name tags and body cams, increased anti-racism training and psychological screening, better coordination and communication between pathologists, coroners, and investigative officers, because there was a constant breakdown in the communication between these different practices and their different duties and the information from one didn't always get to the other. They also called on the Thunder Bay Police to actually establish a major crimes unit, which it didn't have, and to beef up its staffing of its units that deal with these types of cases.
Is there a sense in Thunder Bay right now that any of this will get done?
that's a good question. Yes, there's a belief that, and this is whatever, like, this is part of the messaging that's coming, that this is a new beginning, right? The mayor is saying that, the police chief was saying that, and I think that people want something to happen, to change, and I think that they're going to hold the authorities to that change. I mean, there's already talk about creating support groups for families of the victims whose cases are going to be reopened so they can have legal representation and monitor. You know, this thing is getting national attention. The provincial government has to also keep an eye on this, and they have a responsibility to this as well. And the federal ministers have also, you know, expressed that they're aware of what's going on.
We are dealing with racism in many other institutions, not just policing. This is something that we need to name and deal with as a country.
So there's a lot of layers of power that do have varying degrees of responsibility to ensure that what is called for in this report happens, because it has to happen. It's been called a crisis. It's been called an emergency. And these are real lives. These are real people. This is a place where colonialism is still an open wound.
Jorge, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Earlier this week, the body of another Indigenous teen, Braden Jacob, was found in a park in Thunder Bay. The 17-year-old from Wabukwe First Nation was in the city to get medical help, his family said. That's all for today. Front Burner comes to you from CBC News and CBC Podcasts. The show is produced by Chris Berube, Elaine Chow, and Shannon Higgins, with help from Alina Ghosh and Robert Parker. Derek Vanderwijk does our sound design. Our music is by Joseph Shabison of Boombox Sound. The executive producer of Frontburner is Nick McCabe-Locos. And I'm your host, Jamie Poisson. Thanks for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.